let's talk about the Sreifa Satalmud. Friday is Erev Shabbos Sukkah. I'm going to finish. Okay, there was an ancient minute decided by the Magen Avraham in the name of the Shibui Leket. The Magen Avraham and the Shibui Leket signed a minute that Yechidim individuals have accustomed to fast every year Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas. That means this Friday. In 2 days from now is Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas. There is a minute put down in Magen Avraham that you should fast. A tainus. Why? To commemorate the horrible event, the horror, the tragedy of what happened in the year, we'll use the secular year for the sake of simplicity, the year 1242, right? Is that the year? 1241?
Yes,
1242, what happened in France, in Paris. What happened in France in the year 1242? It was the culmination, it was the end of a very tragic sequence of events that ended in the burning, what we call the Sreifa Satalmud. The Talmud was burned. What was burned? 24 cartloads of not Sefer Torah, Talmud, volumes. Oh, no Sefer Torah. It was not, they didn't want to burn the Old Testament. They burned 24 wagon loads of volumes of the Talmud. The Talmud, what's with the microphone? The microphone over here is making funny noises.
Found one shas left
in that.
That's what I read.
And not only the Talmud Bavli, also Sifrei Agada, Sifrei Medrash, and Sifrei Halacha. Why did they burn? Now these how many volumes? How many svarim? Approximately 1,200 svarim were burnt. Now you have to remember, this was approximately 200 years before the invention of the printing press. Okay, 200 years before the invention of the printing press, and each of these volumes was handwritten. And do you know how much effort goes in to creating the parchment and the ink and copying mila by mila every letter onto each of these 1,200 volumes? The loss for the Jewish people in France was beyond description. It was enormous. A person who was present at the Sreifa Satalmud was the Maram Mirandberg, the famous Maram Mirandberg. According to my calculation, he was approximately 22 years old at that time, a very young man. He was horrified what he saw, and later in his life, he composed the famous Kina Sha'ali Surufa Ba'esh. Really, I should have brought it over here. We can go over the Kina. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow. Maybe not. Probably not. But we'll talk about this. Sha'ali Surufa Ba'esh. He wrote this Kina, and we recite it on the Tisha B'Av. The first line, a part of it, is styled after the famous Piyut composed by Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, Sha'ali Shalom Yerushalayim. The famous, it's composed with the famous piyut of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. So he composed his piyut in the same style. And Sha'ali Srufa Ba'esh, you who have been burnt in the fire, you should ask, you should speak up the Torah, you should defend yourself. Is there going to be a replacement for this tragedy, for the burning of the Torah, of these 1,200 volumes of Talmud that were studied by the Bnei Yisrael, that was essential for their survival in Galus? Well, who's going to replace these Sifrei Torah? He was horrified. He composed this Kina. This Kina is recited on Tisha B'Av. It's one of the 45 Kinois that is part of the traditional collection of Kinois that we recite on Tisha B'Av in Nusach Ashkenaz. And indeed, many have a custom to recite it Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas, even if you do not fast. I think it's Mem Aleph. If I'm not mistaken, it's 41. In the art scroll counting, it's 41. You got to look there in Mem Aleph. Is that Sha'ali Srufa Ba'esh? If you can bring it up, I would appreciate that if you can bring it up. Sha'ali Srufa Ba'esh. Even if you're not going to fast on Friday, which many of us don't fast, the Magen Avraham says the tainus for Yechidim, only individuals fast, only special people fast, but there's no harm in after davening, in reciting the Kina Mem Aleph in the Kinas of Tisha B'Av, Sha'ali Srufa Ba'esh, to commemorate what happened on Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas. In that particular year, it was the fifth day of Tammuz. This year, Erev Shabbos will be the sixth day of Tammuz. Tomorrow is the fifth day of Tammuz. There are some versions, there is a tradition that there are some families that fasted not on Erev Shabbos, they actually fasted on the calendar date of the fifth day of Tammuz. Now, what exactly happened? How did this thing come about? So there's a lot of interesting things I came across. I printed a lot of stuff online, a lot of articles. There's a lot of traditional stuff. Unfortunately, I didn't get to go through the traditional stuff. The most basic description is a very, very fine footnote, a very long, probably the longest footnote in the whole article. Kinois is the Akdama to this Kina Mem Aleph, describing the background to the event that happened in 1242 in Paris. The debate between the Christians and the Jews, which we'll discuss in a moment, and a very long description of the history, the background of the Maharam Ehrenberg, his life and who he was, and his heart in witnessing this event. So, if you want to get the basic ideas, it's right there in the footnote in the article. Kinois, a very, very fine write up. Who wrote the Kinois? The Kinois was written by Gifter's son-in-law. Who's going to give the son-in-law?
Chaim
Foyer, okay? So this already is classic. His write-up must have been read probably hundreds of thousands of times. Hundreds of thousands of times by people all over the world. That's the basic knowledge. He really had a very great responsibility of writing this up. In all their new editions, they just quote word for word what he wrote. Okay, maybe to bring it to you for a second, or maybe we'll quote for a little bit. Now, there's a lot more. I mean, this is again. It's like it goes on. There's a lot more besides what he wrote. But believe me, this is gold. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of new things that have come out to give us some more information about what happened. But basically, what happened was there was one of the Baalei Tosfos by the name of Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yechiel miParis. He's in the Baalei Tosfos. He's quoted in the Tosfos throughout Shas. He was the Rav of Paris. He took over someone. One of the previous Rabbanim died. He became the Rav, and there was an apikoris there by the name of Nicholas Donin. This person was a Jew. He was a Shomer Shabbos. He was from birth, and he was a big, big troublemaker, okay, to say the least. And eventually, Rabbi Yechiel miParis had no choice but to put him in Cherem. Okay, he was ostracized. He was put in Shanta Cherem. And this triggered a very great degree of resentment, and ultimately he became an apostate. He joined the church, and he was baptized, and he began to work his way up in the church. Now, this is not in the Kina, it's mentioned over here, but he was very instrumental in the Sixth Crusade. Okay, in these years there were about 10 Crusades. The first Crusade was 1096. That's the famous Crusade. That we spend Chaf Sivan, the tithes of Chaf Sivan, we commemorate the first crusade of 1096. The Kinais on Tisha B'Av focus primarily on the first crusade in the year 1096. That's when Rashi lived. That's when Rashi lived. Rashi lived in that Tekufa. That's when Yehuda Halevi was alive in that Tekufa. And they were affected by the first crusade as well, even though they were not in Germany. He was in France, and Yehuda Halevi was in Spain at the time. But they were subsequent to the first crusade. There were another 9 crusades. Each one was different. And this he lived. The crusades went on for 200 years. And Rabbi Yechiel miParis lived in the time of the sixth crusade. And this Rasha is a terrible person. This Nicholas Donin was very instrumental in the rallying of the troops for the Sixth Crusade, and he was responsible for the death of pogroms that were carried out in this Tekufa, where 3,000 people died.
I think Rabbi Yechiel was also killed in one of the...
Later, he was killed later on. He had to run away. So this guy had blood on his hands. This Nicholas Donin, Mamish, had blood on his hands, not just time. You don't read about that. You read about it, he was not apocryphous, he was upset. He had blood on his hands. Only a few years, and I think it was 1236, was when he went around preaching, rallying people to join the Sixth Crusade. And in the process, he created pogroms where 3,000 Jews died in this period of time, and he had a part in this. So he was a Rasha from the worst order. He went to the church, and he presented the church. He went to the Pope. He went to the Pope. Now, he, unfortunately, he had inside knowledge of Yadus because he grew up as a frum. Jew. He went to cheder. He went to cheder. Nicholas Dolan, he was a cheder boy. He went to yeshiva like everyone else. And he knew what goes on in Klal Yisrael better than anyone else, and he used that to his advantage to criticize Klal Yisrael. He went to the Pope, and he presented 35 arguments, accusations against the Jews. 35, which included a quotation of over almost 300 Mamari Chazal. 300 Mamari Chazal from the Talmud. And he presented this to the Pope. The Pope was very intrigued. And the Pope, I don't know all the details. It was very, very, there's a lot of this is way over my head. And I have a hard time pronouncing almost every other word in the description of exactly what happened, all the different people involved, and the different parts of the church and different parts of government, and all of their affiliates of different nations. And they basically conspired together with all of their neighbors. There were seven nations, there were seven countries in the vicinity of France, which were all called together to analyze what it says in the Talmud. And ultimately there was a calling for a vikuach. How do you say that in English?
Debate.
No, there's a better word for it.
Disputation.
The disputation. The disputation was called for the year 1240, where Nicholas Dolan would debate Rabbi Yechiel Miparis and make the claim with the argument is that the Talmud is blasphemous. The Talmud is preventing the Jews from converting to Christianity. It says negative things about Yoshka. It says negative things about the Umos Sa'olam. So Michili Paris, he was the one who very eloquently defended the Talmud. Now, there's something very, very important. This is a very critical piece of information which, unfortunately, is not really presented the way it is in a lot of the classical descriptions. Until, and this is what I've gained by trying at least when I came across. I think it's extremely critical to understand this, to understand why it's so significant. Erev Shabbos, Parshas Chukas, why this, the Shrevis of Talmud, how, the significance. Until this point in time, the Goyim, if you ask a Goy, what makes a Jew tick? What's the secret of Jewish continuity? What's the secret? Why are they Jews? Why don't they want to convert to Christianity? What's their problem? Again, it's 1296. Yoshka was around already from the year zero, right? That's how it starts, right? It all starts, year zero starts with his birth. So it's been a long time already, okay? 1,240 years. Why? It's a long time. What makes a Jew tick? Until the year 1,240, you ask a guy, they'll tell you, the Jew holds on to the Old Testament. They're traditional. They hold on, they have the Chamishei Chumshei Torah, they read what it says in the Old Testament, they have a very narrow interpretation of what it means. They have tradition, they're traditionalists. That's what they believed. Goy thought that a Jew's life was tradition, ritual, they pray, and they study the Bible. That's true, but approximately in the year 500, okay, the Talmud Bavli was finished. Talmud Bavli was finished in the year, perhaps something like that, 400 mm-hmm. 500. And before that, everything was oral. But basically, for almost 1,000 years, okay, for 700 years, what makes a Jew tick is not really Chamishei Chumshei Torah. Unfortunately, a lot of Talmid Chum don't know Chumash very well. What makes them tick is the Talmud Bavli. There's some magic. There's some magic that's found in a Daf Gemara that you can't even relate to. There's some magic. You learn a Daf Gemara, besides the fact that the Daf Gemara brings out all the roots of halacha and tradition and Mesorah, this is the bread and butter of Yadus, of Orthodox Jewry, is the Talmud Bavli. Nicholas Dolan told the church, and it was from the record of the debate, the debate has been translated into Latin, and into Hebrew, the records of the debate. It was a shock. It was a watershed in the Goyish world that what makes a Jew tick is not the Bible. It's the Talmud. They didn't know this. They didn't understand this. And this was a very profound chiddush to them. The idea, the Goy, the Umos HaOlam discovered for the first time, it's the Torah Shebal Peh that is the secret to the survival of the Jewish people. It was a well-kept secret. It's unbelievable. It's not a secret. Chazal Darshan, al pi ha'dvarim ha'eleh, the bris was Torah Shebal Peh. It wasn't a secret. Even though it wasn't a secret, it just wasn't well known. They didn't really pay attention to this. This became a chiddush. It became the people walked home. Do you know what I learned? Do you know what I discovered today? The Jews have these books called the Talmud, and that's what they believe in. That's their secret. That's what that interprets the Bible, and this is their tradition, their ritual. Everything is about the Talmud. That's why they don't want to convert to Christianity. It's not because they thought, what's the big deal? We'll debate them a few psukim in the Torah. We'll debate them what it says, a few psukim. Well, we'll read it this way. They'll read it that way. We'll read them what it says in Isaiah. What chapter is it? 64, what is it?
52,
whatever it is. We'll debate them and we'll show them that we're right and they'll convert. They first learned through this Russia, Nicholas Dolin, who had blood on his hands, that the secret to survival of the Jewish people is the Talmud. And this idea has to be, it cannot be emphasized enough. It changed the world. The world discovered the secret to the Jewish people. And with that awareness, their tactics
changed.
That is very critical. The whole Golos changed. The Crusades also changed the world. But the Sreifas HaTalmud, in another very profound way, changed the world. It changed anti-Semitism. It changed the whole approach to how Goyim deal with a Jew. They know the secret is the Talmud. When we destroy the Talmud, when we destroy Jewish education, we'll destroy the Jewish people. It's not the Old Testament. It's not the Bible. That's not going to make a difference. And that is a very critical understanding. Also, part of that we mentioned in the morning is, this is not a well-known, not a well-known idea, is that a major chunk of the fascination that the Christians had at this debate was the discovery of Rashi. Rashi died already over 100 years ago. But Rashi became a major topic, a major subject in the debate. They learned that Rabbeinu Shlomo Yitzchaki is the Rabban Shel Yisrael. Who is this rabbi who has provided commentary on Chamisha Chumshei Torah, who has provided commentary on the Talmud Bavli? And their fascination with Rashi, in addition to the Talmud, was enormous, and he became a target. He became a target for the banning of the printing of Rashi, the burning of Rashi's svarim. Rashi became the great secret of Rashi went out to the world amongst the goyim at this period of time. Now, so again, this led to a debate. Rabbi Chilmi Paris, he very eloquently defended. They say his eloquence and his chokhmah was just beyond description. One of the things they say with the Gemara talks about some of the things that they discussed. It says in the Gemara that Yeshu HaNotzri, he burns in his punishment. The Gemara Sech Gittin in Tsoyar Seches, in burning excrement. So look at this, the Bavli. Look what it curses our God. It says that he's burning in Tzoyer Seches. So Rabbi Chilmi Paris says, let me ask you a question. Who's the king now in Europe? Who's the king in France? Louis IX. Louis IX was the king. He's a very important person in this moment. Louis IX. Tell me, everyone who has the name Louis in France is the king? There's only one king in France. It's Louis IX. Does every citizen in France who has the name Louis, is he the king? Yeshu HaNotri in the Gemara has nothing to do with your God. Yeshu HaNotri in the Gemara lived 100, at least 100, maybe 200 years before the first appearance of Yashka, your Yashka. So what kind of nonsense is this? You're telling us that our Talmud, it curses your God? Our Talmud was written, the Shubin Prachia's student, Yeshua Notri, it's a documented fact, lived in this year. When is the year zero? This is the year zero. This is the year of Yeshubin Prachia. There's no connection between the two.
Matter of fact, this is what the Ramban used later.
Right, the Ramban, not that later, had also a very, very famous Vikuach. In Spain.
You're saying that everything, you don't even know when you're...
So this is one argument, there were many arguments. The Gemara also, Masechta Seferim, it says there that the best of the Goyim should be killed. That was also a heavy part of the debate. There are many things which went into the debate. In any event, the Pope, who was very fascinated with what was going on, and the church, they needed some muscle. okay, the church didn't have the power. They needed the help of the king. So they enlisted the king, Louis the Ninth, our Russia Marusha Yimach Shmo
v'Zichro.
He was of France. What?
Also, the time of Joan of Arc was Louis the Ninth.
Joan
of Arc was in the time of Louis the
Ninth. So Louis the Ninth was extremely influential, and he was the one. And even though the Jews won the debate, and there was a reprieve for about a year, the Christians somehow manipulated. They played the game. They manipulated that still in all of the Svarim should be the Talmud should be burnt, and on the order of Louis the Ninth, you have to give credit where credit is due. It's nothing to laugh about. But on his order, the Sreifas HaTalmud came to be. They gathered. It's also interesting. They gathered. The main gathering, the inspections, took place on Shabbos, and they broke into the shuls on Shabbos. That's when the order went out to go and to snatch all the volumes of the Talmud. Rabbi Yechiel Paris was a chacham. He saw what was coming, so he had 300 of his students memorize Shas. Memorize Shas because he saw what was coming down the line. So when, even though it will be destroyed, they were still committed. They would know. They would be able to write it at a later point in time. And at this point in time, because of what had happened, many Sefarim were written in order to prepare for this event, or as an outgrowth, the Smag, Sefer Mitzvah HaGadol, the Sefer Mitzvah HaKatan, the Mishnah always quotes the Aruch HaSchayim. The Aruch HaSchayim was written as because there was no Talmud, people could not learn halacha. You had a basic collection of the basic halachas. Was the Aruch HaSchayim was written at this period of time, and the Smag, the basic mitzvahs were compiled, because since there was not going to be a Talmud, people had to be ready at least have other books in order to preserve. So there's a lot of Harbatz HaTorah came about because of what was coming, because they saw the handwriting on the wall that the Talmud would be banned. Indeed, they could not hold back. In the year 1242, King Louis, he gave the command that all volumes of the Talmud should be seized, 24 carloads containing 1,200 volumes of Talmud and Medrash, and Agada, and Halacha were collected and were burnt in the center of Paris. And the Balei Musr of the generation, they said that this happened 40 days after the Rambam's work were burnt, Mor Nevuchim and Sefer Hamad. You have to remember, in Spain, at the same point in time, the Rambam, there was a debate going on. The Rambam already died. The Rambam was long gone since when this event took place. But the Rambam, he wrote, Rambam in Spain, the Jews had a different approach to Yadus. They were very much intermingled. They mingled in society.
Yes.
And they studied philosophy. They loved, in France and Germany, it was probably more like a ghetto-like existence. In Spain, they were more integrated into secular society, and they enjoyed studying philosophy. And the Rambam, he approved of this approach. The Rambam, he wrote Sefer Mor Nevuchim. And the Rambam and Sefer Hamad wrote some controversial things, which was a little bit too much for the people of Germany and France to deal with. And out of this grew a very big debate between the Jews of Spain and the Jews of France. What is the proper derech in serving Hashem? And one thing led to another, until some fanatics, some extremists, they took the works of the Rambam and they burnt it. They submitted those works to the Dominican monks, to censor it and to claim their word, this blasphemy, v'chulu, v'chulu. And indeed, they succeed in the Rambam's farm being burnt. Now, Rambam is the Rambam. We don't play around with the Rambam. So it turned out that exactly 40 days later, on the same spot where the Rambam's works were burnt, due to the actions of Jews, is where the Christians burnt the 24 cartloads of Sfarim, which the people, the Gedolim of the generation, interpreted as divine retribution. When Jews burn the books of other Jews, HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes the Jews by allowing the Christians, the Goyim, to burn the books of Jews. So the Gedolim of the generation, they interpreted this, that what happened, the tragedy, was a punishment for the intolerance. That a Jew, that we have to learn, that's a very big mistake in Klal Yisrael, is to be tolerant of other ways of life, just because it might not be your derech of life. there are other legitimate ways to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and especially when Gedolei Yisrael, like none other great than the Rambam himself, he wrote Mori Nevuchim, it's not the proper thing to go and submit his works to the Christian, to the Goyim, that it should be burnt, and therefore some interpret this was an outgrowth of what happened. By the way, we know the famous Rabbeinu Yoina, who wrote the Sefer Shari Tshuva, articles about to publish now. They're about to publish now Shari Tshuva in English, just about ready to publish it. I think it's going to be the first volume they're going to publish after Rav Meir Zlotta with Sech Tzav Levracha, his Sispatira, is the Shari Tshuva. The Shari Tshuva in English. And the Shari Tshuva was written by Rabbeinu Yoina. He wrote this as a way of doing teshuva. He was part of the critics of the Rambam. He was critical of the Rambam. And when he saw what happened in France, the burning of the Talmud, he recognized his mistake and he did teshuva. And he went, he went to every shul where he preached originally against the Rambam. He went back and he told them, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. And his nusach was Moshe Emes, V'Torasa Emes, V'Kulanu Badoim, a play on the B'nai Korach. Just like B'nai Korach from the ground, they smoke him out of the ground, and they said B'nai Korach, Moshe Emes, V'Torasa Emes, V'Hein Badoim. He would go around saying about the Rambam. Rambam was Rav Moshe Ben Maimon. Moshe Emes, V'Torasa Emes, V'Kulanu. All of us are Badoin. He went to Eretz Shol, to the Kever of the Rambam, to beg Mechila, but he died on the way. The Shah, and he wrote the Sefer Shari Tshuva as a means of doing tshuva for arguing, going up against the Rambam. In any event, this was a very great tragedy. I want to make one interesting point. I want to make one observation. The one that was instrumental, who caused all of this to be, was King Louis, Louis the Ninth. Louis the Ninth was later, how do you say, canonized?
Yeah.
He was declared a saint in the year 1297 because of his efforts in the Crusades, in the Sixth Crusade, the Seventh Crusade, and the other things that he did. He was no saint. We all know that.
Also, the cardinal at the time was somebody by the name of Cardinal Rochelle.
New Rochelle. So, by the way, who is named? I want to make an observation. I didn't see this anywhere else. I want to make the following observation. The city, now in French you pronounce it Louis. Louis. You pronounce it Louis, boy, you're in trouble. You'll be knocked down, right? Louis. In America, there's a city called St. Louis. There's a city called Missouri, St. Louis. St. Louis. That is named after Louis the Ninth. Okay, there's only one Saint, as far as there's only one St. Louis. The Cardinals, right? The baseball team?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's also named after something to do with
St. Louis Cardinals.
Cardinals. Well, so it's also related.
Now
here's my observation.
It's the bird.
Named after the bird.
Right.
The bird?
Yeah, the red Cardinals.
Yeah, because the original
I don't know.
The bird is named after the Cardinals.
Okay, now
that's
here's my...
the Cardinals wear red.
Now here's my observation. Let's fast forward. Holocaust. Let's fast forward Holocaust. There are a few key events that contributed to the Holocaust in the very beginning, early stages of the Holocaust. One is Kristallnacht, okay, that's Gedavra Yidua. Kristallnacht, according to historians, was the middle of the Holocaust. But there's another major event, and all the historians talk about, you can't get away from it, was the voyage of the St. Louis. Right? The voyage of St. Louis, approximately 930 people. I don't know the numbers. They made it into a movie. There are movies.
Right. Okay? Yeah. Ship of Fools.
Voyage of the Damned.
Yeah. Damned, right. So the voyage. So there's this ship, and approximately 930 people were on board. Almost all Jews. All the passports stamped with a J as a Jew, and they came to Cuba. They were trying to land and find a safe haven in Cuba, and the Cubans refused to accept them. They went to Miami, United States, after begging. I don't know the whole story. You know the story better than me. After lobbying and using every book, every trick in their book, begged the United States to take the Jews in, to take these Jews off the ship. No one wanted to take them. They thought maybe they'd go to Canada. No, they didn't want. They went to Canada. I think also it's Canada. You have to know the whole story. But no one wanted to take in the Jews. And they had no choice, the captain had no choice but to return back to Germany. And not all of them, I think 200 of them perished in the Holocaust.
I think
200 survived.
200 maybe survived.
Survived? No, I heard 200 perished. Most of them did survive.
They got off
whatever it is. Whatever it is, that's not the main point. The main point over here is who's watching? Hitler, Yimach Shemo, Vizichro was watching. And so were the Germans, and so were the Ummah Sulaim, and they basically said, look at that, no one wants the Jews. No one wants. Look at that. The ship is sailing aimlessly.
The British, after the war,
yeah,
when they were told pressed by the Americans, open up Palestine, he says, why don't you open it? You don't want him in America. So you want him in America.
Right. No one, the Germans were watching, Hitler was watching, no one wants the Jews. This was an event which has major, major weight in the Holocaust. There's no doubt about it, all historians acknowledge a very, very significant, what year did this happen? Anyone know? I don't know what year this happened, but what exactly what point?
Around 38, 39.
So right before?
Maybe 37.
Okay, no. So whatever it was before Kristallnacht, right? Before Kristallnacht? I assume it's before Kristallnacht. Whatever, this was a major, major event. Now, I'm just making an observation, okay? I'm making an observation here. Isn't it strange that this event that had such importance, weight in the Holocaust, the name of the ship that carried these 930 Jews was named after Louis the Ninth, St. Louis? It was named
May 39.
That's not Amish. That's right. That's right at the beginning. Right. That's the same time as Kristallnacht. Same time.
November.
And when was this?
November.
And when was this?
This was before
Kristallnacht.
A few. A few months before. A few months before. Isn't it?
Kristallnacht was the year before.
The year before. Okay. Isn't this Haloy Davar? Isn't this significant that the name of the ship? Nothing happens by Hashkacha. That the name of the ship that are carrying these Jews is named after King Louis, the same one who ordered the Sreifa Satalmud when he discovered at the time and when in the aftermath of the discovery, what makes a Jew tick? It's not the Bible, it's the Torah Shebal Peh, Har Sinai. It's Al Pi Advar Ma'ir Asher Krati Itchem. This ship is named after the same person. And also, it's very ironic, if you go to Sima Shas, what is the most famous drush at the Sima Shas? Rabbi Shapiro himself said, Rabbi Akiva almost drowned. Was Rabbi Akiva almost drowned? How did I survive? The Daf Shel Svina. The Daf Shel Svina is what, I think one of the times he saw a ship sink. And who's on the ship? Rabbi Akiva. Oi! Look at that. Rabbi Akiva died, he drowned. And he said, and then he met him. How did you survive? I hung on to the Daf Shel Svina. The Daf Shel Svina is what gave me life. And that the Yam HaTalmud. And the Drush is when you swim through the Svina, you hold on to a Daf Gemara, this is what gives you life. Here you have a boat, a ship, the Svina, with all of its dafim, which is named after the person who wanted to destroy the Sfarim, the Talmud, the dafim of the Talmud. And that basically says to us is that the Holocaust was just another example of the Sreifa Satalmud. It wasn't a Sreifa of 1,200 volumes. It was a Sreifa of 6 million volumes of the living Talmud. That's what Hashem's. That's what. Who can say this? But like Hashem is giving us a message, is that the historians want to say, "Oh, the Holocaust. It was a racist. It was the race against the Jewish people, their genes. Sheker. It's against the Torah. The Muhammad of the Hitler, the Nazis was a Muhammad against the living Torah that exists in every single Jew, even those who are not religious." What makes a Jew, the survival of Klal Yisrael is Al Pi Hadvarim Ho'ele Karati Tchemris, is the Torah Shebal Peh, capturing the Talmud Bavli. It's something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking to us. If this ship, which is one of the main events that triggered, that was important in the Holocaust, is named after the same person who so many years before, in 1242, ordered the first time that this thing happened, the Sreifa Satalmud. There's a connection. There's a connection to learn from. Connection to learn from is what is our success. Our secret of success is the Talmud. And that only demands of us to have more appreciation and to spend more time cherishing and learning our true heritage. All right, with that we will conclude.